right after those three little stars or dots or you have over there at the bottom, page 12. So just, I guess, to bring us back up to date for a minute to recap where we are. So we're in the middle of the section called Darchei Shemayim. I'm focusing on the Midas HaRachamim. And the particular topic we have at hand over here is understanding the role of Schus Avos in our daily avoda. How does Hashem favor us based on the fact that we descend from the Avos and Imahos? We had four questions on that as to how that's considered just. How can Hashem show favoritism based on who our ancestors were? How is that considered MS on Hashem's part to do that? I mean, a whole slew of questions regarding this issue. We spoke about last week how the we have to understand a pasuk in Mishlei. It says, "Mishalich betumot tzaddik, ashrei banav acharav." The tzaddik walks in his perfection, and fortunate are his children after him. And Rechaim of Lodzin explained that to mean that whatever midos that tzaddik works very hard to attain, puts toil into changing himself, into growing as a Jew in his avodas Hashem, those midos are transferred to his children or her children in the blood, in the DNA, which means that not that it's automatic in the child, but it means that the child now has a very easy time to obtain those midos if they work on him. And we brought examples from the Avos themselves, from Avram Avinu. Avram had 10 tests, 10 nisyonos, as we've read about in the past few weeks in the Parsha. And all of Avram's nisyonos, part of the concept of these tests, was so Avram could bring these different midos out into the world, and therefore make them reality for his descendants, which is us. And whatever Avraham accomplished in his avoda, and all the Avos Imos together, really, those are all midos we have within ourselves as Jews, which we can very easily bring out into the world if we work on them. That was the point we made until now. So we're going to now start at the bottom here of page 12. Ad kan dibdarnu bibir divrei Rabbeinu Chaim Zatzal. So we've now explained this idea of Rechaim of Lodzin. Why we do this? The man havin es ora gadol shehir lanu midvar bakatsarim. We can understand now how great the light is that he shed upon this concept, and you know how amazing are these words. So we understand that what the Avos Imahos did is with us this very day, which is incredible, and what we do in our own lives, that gets passed on to our children in the blood, in the DNA. Just like physical traits do, so do spiritual traits. So now he continues. We can add on the following point. Every spiritual challenge that we have in life, it's always going to be a struggle of the shtabdus hagufnius. How much is the guf, is the body, is the physical part of ourselves, how much is it controlled by the nefesh, controlled by our spiritual side? Meaning, the cycle is always going to be that the right thing to do is X, but my body wants to do Y. Whether it be my emotions, my physical drives, but it's always a struggle of what my mind and my soul tell me is X, but my body or my emotions or my drives say Y, and how do I overcome that struggle? That's always going to be that give and take. So the idea of Hishtabus HaGufnius LeNefesh, this is the Yisod of Everyday Sayon, means that there's going to be a struggle between the Guf and the Nefesh, and the question is, who wins? That's always the question. We therefore have to fight the Yitzhara, and we have to lower it down, overtake it, to be able to stand with the understanding of the depths of our heart on the truth, and never be swayed to think that the sheker is emes. He's explaining now that when we go through a struggle, our job is to cling to what we know is right, to what our hearts feel and know is the MS, is true, and not fool ourselves to thinking what's wrong is actually right. We've discussed many times before how the worst struggle one can have is when you take something which is actually wrong and you're able to then think that it's correct. If you know something's wrong, eventually you'll stop doing it, because no one wants to do the wrong thing. So we give in sometimes. You know, we don't have control, we don't have self-discipline, we make mistakes. That's human, that's understood, but we don't carry on like that because we know that we don't want to live lives of doing things that are wrong. The worst thing is when we fool ourselves thinking it's right. If something which really is wrong, we can then rationalize and explain to ourselves why it's actually true or right, but that's the worst part. That's the worst form of ra, because then there's no way out of it, because you think it's right. Eitz hadas tov ra, which is the original sin, was when Tov and Ra get mixed together. They get confused. And what you think is actually good is bad. You think is bad is good. And that's the worst confusion to be in. So when you struggle with Yitzhara, It's the how much is the guf going to be subjugated to the nefesh, and how careful can we be not to confuse sheker from emes. Halo haklal shokol eila. The general concept is the following: koch advekis el emes be emes. So he puts it into one little phrase here. It's being able to cling to the truth in truth, which means that you're sticking to your principles no matter what comes your way, and you're sure your principles are actually correct. Because if your principles are wrong and you're sticking to the wrong thing, then you're not getting yourself anywhere. So you're sticking to the emes be emes. So this ability to overcome the Zahara in this manner, we also get from the Avos. Let's take a simple example. Back to Avraham a second. Avraham, we know, is called Avraham Ivri. Ivri is a term which means that Avraham stood Me'ivr HaNahar, he stood on one side of the river, and the metaphor is that the whole world was on one side of the river, going against him, and he stood alone and stood strong in his beliefs on the other side of the river. So what does that mean? That means that Avraham had quite a challenge. I mean, we can't imagine. You know, we Jews were a minority in the world. And we know that we're not agreed to by all the nations around, but you know, we have several million Jews, and we have thousands of years of history to support us, so we feel confident in who we are. Imagine you're the only one. There's never a Jew before you, hasn't been a Jew after you yet. You're the one Jew in the world, and everybody is saying you're crazy, you're wrong, it makes no sense, you're defying everything the world stood for 1,000 years, and you're going against your father and your grandfather, and etc. Imagine that pressure. Imagine having to stand up to that challenge and say, no, there's one God in the world, I'm following his will, I'm doing what's right. It's, you know, you can question yourself thousands of times over. It's even if you're a very strong and honest person, it's very hard to withstand the entire world coming at you and challenging you in that way. Avraham is called Avraham Ivri because he was able to stand on one side of the river, Ivri HaNahar, and fight the entire world. Now we call ourselves Hebrews, Ivrim, and that's because that's a trait that every single Jew has. We're able to withstand that pressure from the world around us. And even though we're always going to be a minority in the world, and even though we have a lot of pressure, and we've been disagreed with for thousands of years, and tormented and tortured for our beliefs, we still hold strong to our beliefs, and that's a koach that was given to us from Avraham Avinu. So the able, and that's not just true in terms of standing up to external pressure, but it's the idea of being able to stand up to the Yetzer Hara, stand up to things that come our way, which we know are wrong, and never give in, and never fool ourselves to thinking that they're right and I'm wrong, but to stick to what we hold, stick to our guns, stick to our beliefs, and be able to overcome it. That's a Yerusha from the Avos. Hine gam zu asakoach hazeh, yesh asher yasa adam tova. Even without this koach to overcome pressure, to overcome a challenge, there are people out there in the world who do good things. Lefamim gam tova harbe. They do very good things. That's because the Yitzhar is not fighting them. The people out there in the world who are able to do a lot of good, but they're not going through any challenge. Nothing's actually working against them, so it's easy to do good. It's not an issue. Why is that? He says in parentheses here, a lot of reasons why that might be. A lot of people may not have any challenges coming their way, and they can do good without the challenge. But these people, if Yitzhar stood up to fight against them, if they had to experience any sort of opposition to what they're trying to accomplish, they'd fall right away. It's not a simple thing. When there's opposition coming against you, to stand strong in what you believe, it's very difficult. Yet, we have that trait in us from the Avos and Imahos. They had to stand strong in their beliefs, whether it be internally at Sahara, whether it be pressure from the outside. And therefore, a Jew has that ability. Alkena roes koach ha-tshuva be'atzmo. Lilchum Yitzro v'lashavro. So if you see in yourself, you have the ability for tshuva, you can fight against Yitzro Hara, and you can break it. Even things which before you've stumbled in, and you failed in, you can fight it. V'lasakas atzmo l'bayase ra'od. And you can fix yourself, you can perfect yourself to no longer do any evil. Asher ke'elebo hine yeshlam osa ashiros haruchnis. That means that you are an heir to this great spiritual wealth. Ashirus hanafshis shirashnu osa miyavasinu, that we have inherited from our ancestors. So this is another point that we get from the Avos and Imahos, the ability to withstand challenges, no matter what they are, and allow the nefesh, allow the emes, allow what's right to overpower that the drives that we have and the pressure that we experience. So this is all his build-up to answering his questions. Now he's going to get more to his answers now. So we understand this concept. Then let's go back to the main question. You have in a courtroom, two people who did the same exact crime. The judge says, well, you're going to jail because I don't know your father, and you're off the hook because I know your father. The judge is corrupt. He's off the bench, finished. You know, that would be terrible behavior. It'd be dishonest. It'd be immoral. So how can Hashem say, okay, you're a Jew, you descend from the Avos Imahos, and therefore I'm going to treat you with rachamim. You're a goy, and therefore I'm going to judge you and punish you. You do the same thing wrong. So how is that considered emes? Hashem is just. How can Hashem do that? So now we've introduced the fact that we have within us so many positive traits that we've inherited from our ancestors. And the goyim are not privy to that. They don't have those traits because they don't have ancestors on the caliber of the Avos Imahos. So now let's try to explain the contrast. Vyata. So all of us are able to know that we haven't yet lost this great wealth that we've inherited from the Avos. Not just them, but all of the great tzaddikim that have stood up in Klal Yisrael from then until now. But how foolish are those people, those Jews, that take this great inheritance, this great legacy they have from the Avos, and they switch it for this lowly physical lifestyle. Like we said, it's not automatic. It's easy to attain if you're a Jew because it's innate within you, but you can choose to reject it. You have that choice. Not only do they reject the inheritance, the heritage of the Avos, but they defile themselves, their nefesh, their soul. And they end up being their entire lives basically prisoners in servitude, not to Hashem, but to their own physical desires, to money, to taiva, to kinna, to their neighbors, to the styles around them. You become a prisoner, you become a slave to the world around. So instead of us being able to say, no, these are our principles, this is what we do, and you're not going to stop me, I'm going to stand up against you, rather you become a little subject, you're subservient to the whole world around you. You have to follow everything everyone else is doing, you have to pursue all the desires they're pursuing, you have to live lifestyles like they do. And they have no way, they have no idea how to save themselves from it. You end up sort of trapped in who you are, in the lifestyle you're living. You can't get out of it because you've rejected the ability that the Avos gave us to say, no, I'm going to follow what I feel is right, and I'm not going to be subject to what you are influencing me to. So Rav Dessler says, Ashreinu, Ashreinu, we are so fortunate that we, I mean those I guess who are learning the Sefer, have been zochet to taste the sweetness of Torah. We understand these principles to do good for us our whole lives. We understand what true happiness is, as we discussed. We understand what true success is. And we understand the great potential we have to stand up for what's right, overcome challenges, to live lives of pleasure, in the spiritual sense, in the real sense, but osher ruchni, with the spiritual wealth, v'mesek his karvos elav his barach, and with the sweetness of being close to Hashem. Asher nuchal lekavos ayadeza, ki noma ladas es atova panimi shebechol maase Hashem imanu, and through this we can hope, we can look forward to, we can aspire to, all that we've learned that Hashem will do for us. We'll always be happy. We'll appreciate what we have. We'll learn how to focus on inner understandings, on depth. To stick to truth. And this will help us be zocha to break Nitzahara. So we have within us this choice to make. We can either choose to follow the path of the Avos and Imahos, and then as Jews, I mean, it's not easy, but it's innate within us to be able to overcome challenges. We still have to fight, but they implanted in our DNA the ability to break the Tzahara, to grow, to break our bad midos, to have self-control and self-discipline and do what's right. Or we can choose to reject that beautiful heritage, to reject that wealth. And even the people who reject it, they think they're rejecting it to achieve what they would call happiness. Ultimately, we know it doesn't lead to happiness. It leads to a life of being superficial, often of despair, often of depression, because they're not working towards anything real. Not working towards any real goals. They're stuck just in the the nitty gritty taivas of this world, the drives, the material drives which are around us, and that's a choice which is to be made. So, but a Jew has it within them as their default that we can choose very easily to live a different lifestyle and be different people. So now let's explain the answer to the question. So now let's pay attention to this. Let's focus on this. Now let's go back to our example of the two thieves in the courtroom. Two people are brought before the judge to be judged. And they both stole. They're both guilty. Really, both of them should be put into jail. They're both guilty, they should be put into prison. But a good judge is not just looking at the act, he's looking at the cause. What caused them to perform this crime? Because the role of a judge, I'm sure this is debated amongst lawyers and professionals, but what's the real role of a judge? Is it to just punish? Or is it to actually help the criminal to improve? I think there's terms used. Is it punitive, or is it? I forgot the terminology used out there. But is a judge of the court system, is the jail system, is the goal of it to punish the criminals and just to be a deterrent for crime, or is it to help them improve as people and to bring them back into society as new people?
Rehabilitative.
Okay, rehabilitative or punitive? That's the question. So the judge, the good judge, he's trying to figure out, well, what's the way in which I can help to rehabilitate, to improve this thief so he never steals again? I'm not trying to punish him, I'm trying to make him a better person. In an ideal sense, we don't always trust the judge can do that or the thief will ever improve, but in an ideal sense, we understand that. We want him to live an honest life and not be corrupt anymore, not do any more crimes. And ideally, we'd rather not put him in prison. I mean, prison, in a certain sense, is Betty Evan. No, we don't want to use a prison if we don't have to. If we can rehabilitate the person in a different manner, we would. Because the judge is not trying to take revenge. He doesn't want to punish and hurt somebody. What he wants to do is help to improve the person so that a person won't do any more bad. So if that's a judge's role, now we can look at a courtroom from a very different perspective. You're not looking at what was the crime done. The crime was the same crime. Both of them went into a store and shoplifted. And they both took out $300 of clothing, right? And they're both caught, and it's clear they did the crime. But the question is, if I have two people in front of me that I'm trying to judge, what's going to be the factor to determine, can they be rehabilitated outside of a prison, or is prison the only way to go? That's the question. So when you're looking into the matter, you'll find, let's say one of these criminals actually comes from a family which is a very upstanding, honest family, respected, moral, a good family. And all the relatives are people that are very upright, honest, worthy people. But this criminal, he had a bad friend who influenced him to do the wrong thing. It wasn't like his upbringing, it wasn't who he was. But, he fell into a bad crowd, he was influenced in a bad way, and he ended up stealing. If you could take this criminal and bring him back to his family, who are really good, honest, well-meaning people, it could be that's all he needs to become better. If he's willing to say, I'm dropping the bad crowd, I'll go back home to my family, and I'll try to put myself back into that lifestyle, restore myself to my old ways. So we could say, okay, we'll judge the situation, but we understand it'd be reasonable to say, don't go to prison, go back home, and hopefully you'll become better as you should be. As Yomad Chalasas Ra'ud Olam, if he's around these good people, he will no longer do any evil. Vim Kain Amar Shofet El Libo. So the judge might say, it'd be more beneficial for me and for the criminal to send him home rather than to put him in prison. In prison, he'll just become a hardened criminal. He'll be around other criminals. He won't rehabilitate himself. He'll become more upset, more resentful, and it could be he'll become worse as a person. If you send him home, there's a lot of potential he's going to actually turn himself around and live a true, good, upstanding, honest life. Ach bechikro al davar sheni matza ki ein lo mishishpia lov lehetiv es darko. But the other person, the other criminal, you might look into his background and say there's nobody in his life that's going to influence him for the good. Unfortunately, he came from a family of people who are criminals, who are dysfunctional, who are drug addicts, who are immoral. And if we send him back to where he came from, he's just going to fall worse and worse into the depths of crime. That's what happened to him. If we don't punish him, then make him feel uncomfortable, he'll do worse and worse. So the judge will have to decide what to do with this person. He'll have to, unfortunately, to his own regret, put this criminal into the prison because he's no other option. So now we're looking at it from a different perspective. If you're looking at the person, what's the potential for this person to actually improve, to change? Is the potential there or not? Will punishing the person be to the person's benefit or not? Hashem's not out there to punish us. Hashem's out there to help us. Hashem doesn't want us to die. He wants us to do tshuva and live. We say that in the Ilah. So Hashem is looking, what can I do? And any sort of onesh min hashamayim, it's a reaction based on the avera we did. And it's supposed to be for us, it's like, lamashal, the sense we have of pain in our body. It's a very positive thing. We don't like pain. But without pain, you don't know you're sick. That's the problem, unfortunately, with many cancers. No one feels anything. So until it's too late, chas v'shalom, because they don't feel the pain. When you feel pain, it's not comfortable, but it means go to the doctor, and then you have a chance to heal yourself. So an onesh min hashamayim is supposed to be like that pain that we feel, that Hashem is saying, feel the onesh so that you improve yourself. But if we can do tshuva without the pain, if you know we can be put in a situation where we can do tshuva regardless, then that's preferable for us and for Hashem. He doesn't want to punish us. He wants us to become better people. Lo yachos mosam meis. I don't want to kill you. I want you to do tshuva. That's all I want. That's what Hashem's looking for. So now let's think about this mashal. Hatzir is a niflahu ma'od. So this picture we've painted is an incredible picture. Why? Because it helps us understand the big question of midas hadin and midas harachamim. We have two major midos that we always discuss about Hashem. There's the divine attribute of justice and attribute of mercy, rachamim and din. And the question always, as we asked before, is how do the two work together? Technically, we would think what's din is not rachamim, what's rachamim is not din. If you deserve this to happen to you, if you deserve punishment, that's din. If I hold back, that's rachamim. If you don't deserve it, then you don't need rachamim. So the two never seem to work together. But Hashem is one, and Hashem's ways are one, and what Hashem does has to fit. It has to be emes. It can't be that Hashem's going to say, you deserve punishment, but I'm not going to punish you. Well, emes says you should be punished. So how do we get that? How could midas hadin and rachamim both be emes? How can they work together as emes? So now we're going to explain. As we said, Hashem doesn't desire for the person to die. Hashem desires that we do tshuva and live. But yet Hashem knows our hearts, He knows our insides. Hashem knows who has potential for tshuva based on his or her current environment, his or her background, his or her situation. And who's very distant from tshuva? Well, who's a person that Hashem feels the potential for tshuva is not so strong? So again, it's hard to always discuss Hashem's feelings, He knows the future, etc. It's a question we can't really answer. But Hashem sees the potential in a person. We have Bechira. The question of Bechira and Yediyah is a question we don't get involved in because we can't understand those types of things. But ultimately, Hashem understands we have Bechira, and Hashem understands which person has potential for tshuva and which one doesn't, at least without punishment. Hashem says this person is far from tshuva, and the only thing that will help the person is a punishment. Sometimes what you need is to be shaken up. It's an interesting thing. I was once talking to somebody who's a kind of professional in the world of Kiruv, and he was telling me that there's some people out there that you can bring them to a class, teach them, give them a Shabbos experience, and it brings them close to Emes, and inspires them, and they want to do tshuva. For some people, it doesn't help them. What helps them, though, is when chas v'shalom, they experience a tragedy in life. They get shaken up. Something in their world like totally is rocked. So they get, because of that jolt they receive, they start looking for truth and changing their lifestyle and trying, and they want to be able to find happiness, find comfort, and then they come close to Torah. It wasn't the Shabbos experience, it wasn't the class, it wasn't anything you could do for them in terms of the intellect or the emotion, but it's because they experienced, as we're saying over here, lamasho and unishmar, you know, a very difficult situation in life, they become shaken up, and then they search for truth. So those are those pathways to tshuva. So these two criminals we're talking about in our mashal, one of them, you say, you know what, you come from a great family, we'll put you on probation, go home to your parents, take in the lessons of your family, of your household. Your community is a very wonderful community, and through that, if you get involved, your community service is a thing they use, you know, even nowadays, you get involved in these things, we hope that will be something that can help rehabilitate you and let you go back to society as a honest, moral person. The other person, we tell them, I'm sorry, you know, if I send you home, I can't trust you're going to change. You know, your family is not a family that's going to influence you for the good. Therefore, you're going to have to go into prison and learn your lesson. So what the purpose of both reactions of the judge is the same purpose. I'm trying to create a person who's a Baal Tshuva, who changes, who does the right thing. But there's different pathways of getting there. And the judge has to decide, well, which is the pathway to get you to the goal, which is to be a better person. So he says, "La'ofen acharon hazeh nukoron minas hadin." So the guy that gets punished, the one thrown into prison, we would call that minas hadin. That's justice being meted out. That's minas hadin. Kinira shepogas b'yad Hashem onisha. We say this person has been punished by Hashem, and therefore, this person, that's minas hadin. Achim emes gam rachim yom rakacha. But the truth is, rachim agrees in this case. Rachim says, "I care about this individual. And if I send this person back home, they're going to become more immoral, more corrupt, and they're going to end up, you know, dead or in life in prison." So therefore, Rachamim says, put them in jail temporarily so that they can learn their lesson and go back in society with a new attitude. That's Rachamim saying that. So we might refer to it as din because what we see in front of our eyes is a very difficult punishment. Ultimately, Rachamim agrees this is the right thing to do. Because Rachamim means I'm doing it because I care about the person and I see there's a future in this person only in this manner, only through this pathway. Rachamim is the same, Rachamim and Machar are the same letters, tomorrow and mercy. Because mercy means I'm looking towards the tomorrow for the person. I'm looking for the person's future, their potential. When Hashem, they differentiate between Chesed and Rachamim. Chesed is when I'm just giving out freebies. I'm not looking at the person at all. I'm standing there in the street corner and giving everyone who they are, they all get, you know, a free bottle of water. That's chesed. Rachamim actually employs a little bit of seichel. Rachamim is, I'm not just giving things out indiscriminately. I'm looking at the person that I'm giving it to. I'm deciding, is this best for them? And yeah, I might be delaying punishment. I might be looking towards the future to see potential in what I do, but I'm looking into the future. Machar and rachim are the same words. That's rachamim. So Rachamim says, this guy's got to go to jail. We think that's strange. That's not mercy, that's justice. The answer is, well, Hashem is one, and Hashem's goals are one. And mercy and justice work together. It's a matter of how you perceive it on the outside. That's the justice part. But the mercy is why we're doing it. Hashem is acting out of mercy. If this person's being punished, Hashem says, I have mercy on you. I need to punish you because I have Rachamim. Rachmanis says that I should punish you. It's very reminiscent of the famous pasuk, Chosech Shifto Sona Beno, as they say, you know, spare the rod, hate the child. Remember, spoil the child, they say. That idea is a punishment is for the love of the child. Those who have to punish their children, it's not because you hate your child, it's because you love your child. You're trying to teach them a lesson. We know that those children who never receive any discipline, they do become spoiled. And that's not helping your child, it's hurting your child. There has to be discipline. What kind of discipline? That's a different question. But there has to be discipline, there has to be reaction from parents when children are doing the wrong thing, because that's what allows the child to see that's the wrong path. I have to recalibrate myself and go on the right path. So is that rachamim or is that din? That's rachamim. That's because the love of the parent for the child dictates I have to give a punishment. There has to be a consequence. Chosech shifto sonei beno. As it says, if you hold back your staff, you hate your child. That's hatred. That's not love. That's hatred. Because you're not doing them any good. So that's the person being sent to jail. Ofen Hasheni, maybe the other person, the one who is being sent back home, no prison time, no punishment, maybe some probation or something. So how do we understand that? Anukuram midas racham. That's racham. We call it rachamim. The judge is being so merciful. He let me off the hook. Achein alo gam hadin yaskim lazeh. But the truth is, midas hadin agrees to this. Midas hadin says, well, din dictates that this person needs to become better. And how do we make them better? Make them better through sending them home and allowing them to be introduced back into their old community. Because justice is about doing good for the person and fixing them, improving them. If the person could do tshuva otherwise, why should we have to punish? But rachamim will never overlook a chet for no reason. I mean, he'll hold it in a second. Hashem never looks anything. Any chet has to be dealt with. There has to be some sort of reaction, some sort of consequence. But the consequence could come from many different, you know, midos of Hashem based on the person. And also, if the person will never be able to improve without an onesh, that's been onesh. And that's rachamim dictates that. And this is what the Gemara says. If you say that Hashem is a vatran, he overlooks chet. Perish mevatar mochel blitam. That Hashem just will overlook and forgive for no reason. Shall sharos with tshuva, nothing to do with tshuva. Yevatru chayov. You've overlooked your life. Meaning that if you say Hashem overlooks things, then he's overlooking you as well. I mean, you've lost. I mean, to put it in the terms of Rav Dessler, as we're saying over here, if Hashem overlooks your chatayim, that's a terrible thing. Because then what's driving you to become a better person? What's helping you improve? What's helping you gain schar for eternity? It's like if you don't punish a child, then you're not helping the child, you're hurting the child. So if you say Hashem overlooks everything, Hashem doesn't care. You know, he's so nice to me, he never punishes me. So if that's the attitude, then basically you're saying that your life is worthless and you're never going to go in the right direction. If Hashem is never mevat, Hashem might give you rachmanis, and may not punish, not because he's overlooking your chet, because he understands the proper reaction at this moment is to give rachmanis. That's the proper reaction right now. A parent might say at times, the right reaction is not to react. But it was a decision not to react. And that's very true as a teacher or as a parent. Sometimes somebody might be out of line, but you say the right thing to do at this point is to ignore it. And that's the right way to teach or to parent. It's not because you hate the child, chas v'shalom. It's not because you don't care. It's because you do care, and that's the decision which is made. So Hashem might show rachmanis, not because Hashem is overlooking what you did, because Hashem has deemed that letting it slide is the right thing for you, and that'll help you become a better person that way. Other times Hashem might, chas v'shalom, have to punish, and it's because Hashem has deemed the right thing right now as a punishment. But there's always a decision involved, and it's never overlooked. Hashem's always, everything has a consequence, everything has a result, and nothing goes, and nothing just is let slide. We find a very fascinating example in the Torah. We know that there's a concept, ben sora mora. Ben sora mora is a child, a boy who is between 13 and 13 and a half years old, and he rebels against his parents in various ways, and he's sentenced to death. He gets skila. The Gemara says it never actually happened because the details are so precise, it can't really ever happen. But the Torah, the fact there's a partial Torah about it means that there's a lesson to be learned. The Gemara says, if it never happened, why does it say it? Joshua Kapel Schar. You're supposed to darshan it, learn from it, and you'll gain from it. You'll gain schar from it. So Ben Sur Mor is an example for us. What's the example? He's a young child. I mean, he's a 13-year-old kid. Just bar mitzvah. There's no rachmanis there. The Torah says this kid is up to no good. He has to be killed. I mean, Nebuch, a kid just has bar mitzvah 2 months ago, and he's having skila. I mean, is there any worse tragedy? Is there any rachmanis being shown there? Seemingly not. Abiru Chazal, but Chazal tell us the following. What's the point of this? Why would we kill the Ben Sora Mora? Shatamhu Shabiyos HaTaiva Shroslav Kokach. If the child's acting in this way, at age 13, his taiva is so strong, we can't overcome these desires, as the Torah describes. Rachok u'me'od she'asa tshuva. His potential for tshuva is very, very distant. That's the exact point here. We don't see any hope in this kid. The kid is hopeless. It's good for the kid to die now before he does anything too terrible. Rather than die later on, full of terrible chet. I mean, it's rachmanis on the child to give him skila. That's what we're saying. I mean, what does this child do? The child basically stole money from his parents. He bought some meat and wine. He drank them and ate them in gluttonous ways with some friends. That's basically the halacha. He's warned, does it a second time, and he gets killed. So he didn't do anything. Nothing that we described really deserves the death penalty. I mean, stealing is bad, but there's no chiv misa in stealing. Eating as a glutton is not a nice mita, but you're not chayav, and it's not usur, I mean, in any clear way. I mean, you're not chayav misa eating raw meat or drinking lots of wine. You're not chayav misa for that. So why is he killed? The answer is, the Torah is saying that this child at this age, acting in such a way, he's essentially hopeless in terms of tshuva. No one's really hopeless, but his chances for tshuva are slim. So we can play the odds and give him a life and see what happens, but he'll probably end up being a murderer and a rapist and whatever he might be. Or we can kill him now and let him die as an innocent child. It's a very funny thought process in our minds. But the answer is, well, Hashem sees where this kid is going, and Rachmanis on the kid is kill him now and don't kill him later. That's Rachmanis. There's a halacha in the Mishnah. It says, Elim Matzilin Osam Benafsham. These people, you can save them with their own lives. And it describes the case of a rodef, if someone's chasing after someone else to kill them. Or a rodef, if someone's chasing after someone to rape them. So you have the right to kill the person, you know, in the rodef, in pursuit. You can kill them. So usually we understand it as saving the victim, which is true, you are saving the victim. But the wording of the Mishnah is Matzilin Osam Benafsham. You're saving them with their lives. Meaning, this person is about to do a terrible Avera. I can kill them now and save them from the Avera, the victim for sure, but even the criminal. Or I can let the criminal go ahead, do the Avera, and then they're going to die with the horrible Avera on their hands. So it's better to kill them right now on the way to the Avera before they do it, rather than let them suffer through the Avera. It's that same thought process that you see a person about to do something so terrible. Rachmanis dictates, kill the person right now, and don't let them carry through with the crime. So it's something only Hashem could teach us. We can never actually perceive that. We don't know who has potential, doesn't. Ben Sura Mora is only because Torah says so. If the Torah didn't say that these midos are so terrible, this kid is hopeless, then we can never kill a kid like that. I mean, it wouldn't make sense, because we can't read the person's mind and heart. We can't do that. But Hashem says, if you see these behaviors at this young age, this kid is basically hopeless, and therefore better to kill them now than let them live a terrible life. The fact, Rehersh says, the fact that it never happened and can happen means that no Jew is hopeless. You know, every Jew has hope, because Baruch Hashem. but that's part of the lesson over here. That being that can never happen, it's because that every single Jew does have hope for tshuva. So therefore, no one's been Sarah Mora. But the lesson's all the same. The lesson is, this is all, it's Din and Rachmanis together. Rachmanis says this is what has to be done to help the person out. So sometimes Rachmanis can be letting them off the hook, and sometimes Rachmanis can be to give them the death penalty, or put them into jail, or give them Malkus. These are all forms of Rachmanis, because the Torah says this is what this human being needs in order to get to be the best person they can be at the end. It's a fascinating thought process, but we understand how it works. So he continues, and he says, so in this type of situation, the Midas HaDin agrees with Midas HaRachamim, and this is what should be done, because Din and Rachamim work together. Let's see one more paragraph over here. The Kasher is Bar Lano Kol Zeh. Now that this is all clear to us, now we get this concept. Now everything makes sense. If you understand the MS in all the Torah's laws. Hello, it's Bar Lamaila. Ki Rashni Rusha Shiram Yavasinah. So we spoke about at length that we have this great heritage within us from our ancestors. Elohim Kochos and Nefesh Amidos Satovos Asher Ben Nuchal Israchizel Emes Lamu Connected Sahara Lachzer B'tshuva. These are these great Kochos Nefesh that we have, these great Midos that let us concentrate on truth, cling to the truth, stand up against Yitzhahara, do tshuva. This is all Yerusha we have from the Avos and Imahos. V'ata nigla baze ul ma'at. The near to flow. So let's add on one more point here, and we're going to see an amazing thing. So what is zchus avos? We said that there's an idea of zchus avos. It can be depleted. We can have it. It helps us out. How does that work? The answer is that zchus avos are the potential that we have in ourselves to bring us to the right way of life. That's what it means. It's the potential that the avos and imahos gave to us that allow us to act in the right ways as Jews. And therefore, Hashem can give us rachmanis, as we said, because Hashem sees you are of a great stock. You have so much potential within. That goy was not so lucky to have parents like Abraham and Sarah. He didn't get that, and you did. And therefore, because you have that in your DNA, I'm going to give you rachmanis, not because I'm just letting things slide, but because I know that you have potential to change if I give you rachmanis. Odvar Hetav Yosar, we can explain even more. Shu kesher shel kochos zakim hamamidim es ha'adam al emes v'tzedek shem nekraim zechus. So zechus avos is the fact that we have a bond, we have this connection, we have this shaychus to these pure kochos in ourselves, this potential, which puts us in a place of emes and tzedek, and this is called zechus. Zechuyot, like these privileges. We have this potential within. Asher yadam dvukim anu bavosenu. So through the zchus avos, we cling to the ways of our ancestors. Biosenu adayin dvukim midosehem shemasru lanu. Because we still are davuk, we still cling to the midos they gave to us. V'kemeshin tzayim banu osa midos atovos v'kochos hamu'ulos. And since we have in ourselves these great midos and kochos, which are so upstanding and so wonderful and so worthy. Hashem sees that the rope, the chain between us and our ancestors is still there. And Hashem sees that we can choose the path of tshuva and we can perfect, we can rectify, we can fix that which we have corrupted. So therefore, Din says that Hashem should have rachmanis. So Hashem says, you have so much potential within, based on who you are, therefore I'm going to give you rachmanis, and I'm going to let you have a chance and not punish you, because I see that you have this chus to change. He is zakus of the sin, so he's saying zakus is like the purity of the avos within us. So it's not just that they did good things, therefore we should get benefits. Well, I know your father, therefore I'll let you off the hook. It's not that type of protectia, nepotism, whatever you call it. It's not that. What it is that we have in ourselves that potential, those merits, that purity, and therefore I'm going to let things not slide, but let you off the hook, give you rachmanis, because I know how much potential is in you. It's part of the privilege of being a Jew, that we are Bnei Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, and therefore we have that within us. V'yesh tikva l'achariseinu. Therefore, there's so much hope for our future because there's so much potential there. Like we said from Rav Hirsch, no Jew is hopeless. That there's never been a bin Sarah Mora because every single Jew has potential. V'zeu asher yo'oras minas harachamim v'schus avos v'chas v'sholom tama zakus avos mikirbenu. Chas v'sholom, somebody reaches a point where they no longer have any connection to the purity of the avos. So Ms. Rachman then won't be employed, meaning that person needs to be punished because they don't have that potential within. And that's why Chazal tell us some generations did not have Zchus Avos. But they descended from the Avos? The answer is, yeah, but they lost that bond. They broke away from it. It's not automatic. It's there. It's innate within us, but you have to choose to cling to hold on to it. So you have to grab it. If you don't grab it, then you lose it. And let's just finish the last paragraph here. Hayotzi mizeh kelenu l'dabik b'midos ha'avos hakedoshim. So therefore, it comes from this is that we need to recognize the power we have within and cling to those midos. The Medrash says that every Jew is supposed to say, "Masay yigiyu masay masay avosai." When will my actions reach the level of our ancestors' actions? So how can I say that? I mean, I'm going to be like Avraham, I'm going to be like Yitzchak. The answer is, well, the potential's within. You have their midos. So you may never be Avraham, you may never be Sarah, you may never be Rivka. We may not get there. But the potential is in our DNA, then we can achieve such great heights. It's there. It's built into a Jew if we make the right choices. Midas a chesed v'amuna. So chesed, Abraham's mida. Amuna is also Abraham's mida. V'yamin b'Hashem. Midas a yira v'ava. Yira s'Hashem, ava s'Hashem. Midas rachsos a shofar rakal emes. The ability to concentrate on only striving towards truth, cling to truth, not being confused by other ideas in life. We taste of sharos latos, that's mainly not to let ourselves be fooled. Adi b'tuya yitzar, b'tuya yitzahara. We shtokik, we dabik, ruchnias, to have this true yearning to cling to spirituality. These are all part of our heritage. It's all part of who we are. Hyozafi katon, erkenu, navi otoch, nafshin, zakos avos. So, based on our own level that we're on, we can bring into ourselves the purity of the avos. Vashem atov isnahe imanu misarachamim. And then Hashem will give us misrachamim, which Hashem will say that rachamim dictates not to punish you, because the best thing for you is just to figure out who you are, use that purity from within, use that potential, and grow. Koy racham Hashem as amu mehira v'zakenu l'ros b'yeshuaso yeshuas emes. And Hashem shall rachmanis upon his nation and allow us to be zoche to see his Yeshua. So this, he's going to even elaborate more after this, but we've really answered the questions now. Hashem is not showing favoritism. Hashem is saying din and rachamim work together. The goal is to improve this person, this human being. How do we do that? There's many ways. Like I said, a good parent or educator sometimes knows when to use punishments, when to use positive reinforcement, when do you ignore things. That's all part of the chachma involved in chinuch. And Hashem obviously has that chachma, and his rachamim and din work together. They're not separate midos. The two have to agree to one another because they have the same goals. Hashem is echad, and his goals are all one. And therefore, Hashem's goals are always going to be going in the same direction. It's a matter of, you know, what's the external mida that you see? Do you see rachamim or do you see din? But ultimately, they agree to each other because they're all going to the same goal, which is to improve the person. And that's the chos avos. Chos avos is that we have so much potential in ourselves as Jews, and therefore Hashem says, because you have so much potential within, as long as you're of those Jews that don't choose to leave it, chas v'shalom, you cling to it, therefore I'm going to show you rachmanis, because I see that you come from good stock. And you know, if I put you back into your family, you're like this criminal we discussed, you'll learn yashrus, you'll learn emes, you'll learn honesty, you'll learn to be an upstanding citizen. A person doesn't have that potential within, I can't put you back into society because I can't trust you, I'm going to put you into jail. But as Jews, we hope that we were able to cling to the chos of the avos, and therefore we're not put into the jail, we're put back into society and allow that potential to come out within ourselves. All right? Sure.